You're a special kind of people known as show people. You live in a world of your own. The audience paid plenty to sit there and clap, hearing you sing, watching you tap. Did you know your dentist longs to be in show business? Your window washer wants to be a star. And though your analyst may never couch it that way.
Analyst, couch!
You don't know how lucky you are.
An out-of-town tryout can be a difficult time for any show on its way to Broadway. But in the case of the musical Robin Hood, it's absolutely deadly. That's the premise of the Broadway hit Curtains, now playing at the Al Hirschfeld Theater on West 45th Street. Joining me now is the star of Curtains, David Hyde Pierce. He won a Tony for his portrayal of Lieutenant Frank Chofee, the detective called in to investigate the murder. And I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Pierce to my show today. Hello.
Thanks, Leonard. Good to be here.
You've said that this character reminds you in some ways of your father. Did he want to become an actor?
He did. In fact, we just had a group from my hometown. It was the hospital sort of auxiliary called the Flower and Fruit Mission that my mom used to belong to. And they just came to the Wednesday matinee this week. And they brought with me a file that they'd put together from their archives of shows that had been done in my hometown, Saratoga, benefits for the hospital. This is from 1932, 1934. They had programs and reviews of my dad because he was an insurance person, but he did community theater. And the character I play is a detective who longs to be an actor and wanted to do community theater. And Dad had actually... He wanted to go to New York and become an actor, but he graduated from school right in the middle of the Depression, and so he went to work in his dad's insurance agency instead. But the opening paragraph of one of the reviews says, George Pierce should pack his bags and hie himself to Hollywood or Broadway. So I just read that this past week, so yeah, it reminds me a lot of my dad.
And your character is trying to solve the crime at the same time as he's actually... helping this show.
Yes.
He's giving suggestions.
It's a fortuitous circumstance. And I have to correct your pronunciation. It's Chofee. And the reason I know that is that a man named Frank Chofee actually came to the show and was so excited that we were pronouncing it correctly. So I have to make sure that goes
Chofee
out
as in coffee.
Chofee as in coffee.
You know, sometimes I look at a name and I say, now, what did they say Chofee? Did they say Chofee? Is this Italian? Is this Boston? He's a Boston.
He's a Boston. Yeah.
And you actually had to learn how to do a Boston accent.
I did. I worked with a great dialect coach, Kate Murray, who and I studied tapes of Ed Markey, who's a congressman from Massachusetts and a friend of mine. And I really always have liked the way he talked because I wanted to make sure. I thought it was important that given that it's a show that's out of town, trying out in Boston, so all the people involved in the show are from New York. I thought the fact that this guy, this cop, was from Boston, it was helpful to have that distinctive accent to really underline how he's from a different world. So I worked hard on that because I didn't want Boston people coming and saying, I don't know.
The songs in Curtains were written by John Kander and Fred Ebb, who also wrote Cabaret and Chicago. Was it the music that drew you to doing the show?
It was originally the script because it came to me because Scott Ellis, who's the director, had been directing episodes of Frasier, and he came to me in the very last season of Frasier and said, well, there's this show, we'd be interested in you being involved in it. And at the time, I couldn't do it because I'd already committed to doing Spamalot. While I was then doing Spamalot later on, they sent me the script and said, look, we're thinking of doing a workshop. And they also sent... a CD with a couple of the songs, Coffee Shop Nights, the first song the character sings, and this song, Tough Act to Follow, which is a great dance number that he has. So between having read the character and what he got to do and hearing those two extraordinary songs, that was what grabbed me.
But there is some kind of a family thing here. I guess there's networking and show business all along. Deborah Monk and Karen Zimba were in Steel Pier, the last Kander and Ebb musical before Curtains.
Yeah, and Karen, they've both been in Chicago since. There is a family, there's a real family that accretes around John Kander and also Fred. Fred I never got to meet. He passed away before I came on board. But there's something about those guys, not only their talent, but also I know Kander is such a a deeply good person and such a warm, gentle, sweet person. And he attracts people who are, I think, very talented, but also just good folks who make a good family.
They were both guests on the show in the past, and it was a great pleasure to meet them. As we said, Fred Ebb died in 2004. While they were still working on the show, that must have changed the whole production process, and it must have felt strange in a play that's about bringing a musical to life while people are dying to have it actually happen.
Yeah, and previous to that, Peter Stone, who wrote the original book, passed away. The show has had a series of body blows, and I think our director, Scott Ellis, is really maybe most responsible for looking at it and saying, I think we should press on. I think it's worth pursuing. And after Peter,
which is to some degree the message of the musical itself.
It is. It absolutely is. I think the only difference maybe is in the musical, we are less concerned with people dying than we are with the musical going on. There seems to be a switch of priorities there.
Right. These three people die or so. Well, I shouldn't give
away too much. Tell. Yes, we have to be careful what we reveal.
Yeah, we don't want to. And I won't reveal the killer, but it wasn't the butler.
That's right. That's a safe yes.
The story also allows you and Nikki Harris, your love interest in this play, to do a big Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers style number, a tough act to follow. How much of a song and dance background have you had?
None. It was a huge mistake that worked out very well that they would ever give that to me. First of all, Jill Pace, who plays Nikki, is this wonderfully patient person. She's had much more experience dancing than I had. And I coming into the show, I worked with a dance coach in L.A. and worked with a voice coach in L.A. to get ready for this, to try to be worthy of my cohorts on the stage. But nonetheless, the number that Rob Ashford choreographed for us is this huge, no-holds-barred, as you say, Fred and Ginger kind of Margin Gower champion number. And I really had to work hard to be able to do it. And I learned to dance on Jill as much as I did with Jill. So that's why I say she's very patient.
Well, she was a lot nicer to you than Gene Kelly was to Debbie Reynolds, who told me that he was constantly annoyed when they were doing Singing in the Rain, that she couldn't remember all those complicated steps.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, no, I was very lucky. I had extremely patient people working with me.
What about the singing? Didn't you study classical piano at Yale?
I did. I studied in as a kid in high school and at Yale. And
so that must have been pretty serious if you went into college still thinking about a musical career.
Yeah, I was serious about it. I think it was in college that I realized I went to Yale, and so I was exposed to a much broader picture of the world, and I realized that where I fit as a classical pianist was not where I was hoping I was going to fit.
But then you pretty much abandoned music until Spamalot. You were on Broadway in The Heidi Chronicles and Beyond Therapy. Had you wanted to be in a musical?
No, I've done. I had a weird sort of sidetrack, which was I went to a summer camp in New Hampshire, which was a camp that was founded back in the early 1900s, and they had a tradition that every summer they would do a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. And they did all of them. They did the ones that everyone knows, like HMS Pinafore and Pirates of Penzance, and then very obscure ones that no one, that very few people see. But they took it very seriously. And the music director of the camp, they taught these little kids the 8-part harmony of the choruses and all that. So at this camp, which was just a boys' camp, it wasn't an arts camp, I was exposed to this kind of music, which is very funny and very witty, exposed to the idea of really approaching this stuff seriously, even though it's fun, and trying to make it musically right. So that even as a little kid, I kind of had that influence, and I think later on, when I first got into acting, I never thought about doing musicals. And I was always doing legit plays. But then I think the roots of that came back to haunt me.
I remember talking to some other actor who said, I asked, how did you suddenly, how were you able to sing in a musical? You'd never done anything like that before, and you sing a tune. And she said, well, I was acting a singer, and so it was very easy for me to do that as long as I thought of it that way.
I think that, yeah, I understand that. I mean, for me, the kind of singing I have to do in this is much more legit Broadway singing than, say, I had done in Spamalot, which was just sort of patter songs and kind of wacky. But I've also, I do approach it as the character. Because he's a Boston police detective, I feel like this isn't someone who's going to suddenly sing like he's Mario Lanza. he sings with a certain character in his voice, and
but it's perfectly pleasant, and it works.
And
it sounds
works
good.
Well,
and my guest is David Hyde Pierce, who is starring in Curtains, which is at the Al Hirschfeld Theater at 302 West 45th Street, on the other side of 8th Avenue from all the other theaters. A hit show. He won a Tony for his performance as Lieutenant Frank Chaffee. I wonder about Spamalot in another way. Was that a way to ease into musicals? Because there you were part of an ensemble. Here you are the star.
Yeah, that was definitely... It wasn't my goal. My goal was, I knew a few years ago, as Frasier was, even before we knew Frasier was ending, I knew I wanted to do a Broadway musical because it was something I'd never done before. It was a new horizon to approach. So I started taking voice lessons particularly. And then when Spamalot came along, I wasn't thinking, oh, this is a way to ease in. I just thought, it's Mike Nichols, who I adore, directing material that I grew up on and adore. And I thought, man, this would be perfect. I just want to be a part of this.
Well, it seems to have worked. In his review in the New York Times, Ben Brantley wrote that, I'm quoting, you step into full-fledged Broadway stardom with this performance.
Yes.
I don't know if you read reviews, but that's one that you should have read.
I read all the reviews for Curtains because my brother, when the reviews came out, he said, you know, you're, because some were good and some were not. And he said, you know, you're the star of the show. You kind of have a responsibility to know if anyone got hit badly by a review. And fortunately, no one did. They universally loved the company. But, I take them sort of with a grain of salt. That was an extremely generous review to me.
Some actors don't like to look at their reviews because they say that if they get a bad review, they can never get out of their mind. If they get a good review, then they almost feel like they're going to rest on their laurels.
Well, the danger of a good review is they'll say, oh, he was wonderful, especially when he does X, and then you can never, ever do X again because you've been made self-conscious about it. I went for many years, mainly thanks to John Simon, not reading reviews because of his blistering pen. But then it's a little bit like when you do movies. A lot of people, or even the TV show, they don't like to watch themselves because they feel it makes themselves self-conscious. And I found I don't have that problem. I'm able to, as long as I read all the reviews. If I read one, that's a problem. When you read all of them, you realize there are as many opinions as there are reviewers, and it takes the onus off any one.
Now, I saw the show fairly recently. It's been on for
about 7 months now, February 27th.
Has it gotten easier? After all, you're dancing every night. You're singing every night.
It's gotten better in the sense that with any show that has a great company like we have, this is a group who really works together, who plays together. No one has frozen their performance and is doing the same thing night after night. So the show continues to grow and percolate. And I had someone just last night come to the show. She'd been to an early preview. And she said, has the show been trimmed or something? And I said, no, it's just that we've found the rhythm of the piece and how to play it. On the other hand, I'm also falling apart. We're all falling apart because doing it 8 shows a week for 7 months, everything is sore and swollen.
It is an old-fashioned musical, the kind that you don't see much on Broadway anymore except when there's a revival. This is a musical that could have been written in 1959 when Curtains is set, but didn't Kander and Ebb want it to have a contemporary setting?
I think originally, because the script's been sort of in the works for 20 years now, and when it first started out, it was a contemporary setting. The show, instead of being a sort of Western Destry Rides Again kind of musical, was a Commedia dell'arte musical called Masquerade. It was very different, and the whole concept of the piece was very... Pirandello-esque, that as an audience watching, you'd think you knew what was happening, and then you'd see that was fake, and then the thing behind that was fake, and the thing behind... It's very convoluted. It was Rupert Holmes who came to it, saw the songs, many of which were already written, looked at the characters and said, this feels like the 50s. This feels like the kind of musicals that were done then. It feels like that film noir sort of 40s, 50s detective story ambiance, and I think it was a great insight. And I also, what I like about it, too, is that it's a very traditional, very old-fashioned kind of Broadway musical, and yet a lot of the humor is contemporary, works for today's audience without being full of contemporary references.
Well, I doubt that this could have been staged in the same way in 1959.
That's
I think
right.
There would have been some people who would have been shocked.
Yes.
But it also seems odd today when we have Spring Awakening and musicals of that sort, which very much rely on rock as a source. There's no rock music.
But that's also what's so great about Broadway. I saw
a lot of young people in the audience, so they obviously enjoyed it.
I'll tell you, the same thing happens with this show that happened with Spamalot. Traditionally, in a Broadway show on Saturday night, you get a terrible audience because most people Saturday night at the theater have gone out to have drinks and dinner, and they're there as a social obligation, not because they had to come see this play. Spamalot and Curtains both. We have every performance. It's a mix. There's young people. There's older people. It's not one block, so that the younger people are laughing at this set of jokes. The older people are laughing at something else. And so it just keeps going and builds. And we have crazy standing ovations every night. And I think what you were talking about, it being surprising that it's sort of old-fashioned and good-natured, people are grateful to see something like that. As much as they love to be challenged or see something dark, it's also, this is just a wonderful good time.
Do people still think you're Niles? Do you have people come up to you and say, "Hi, Niles"?
No, not like they used to. The people will, now when they do it, they put Niles in italics, or they almost do it sheepishly. Like,
sharing a joke.
So like, "I'm sorry, I know your name is David, but I really just want to call you Niles," which I love that character, and I have no problem with that.
Were you able to hone your sense of comic timing doing that part for so long?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great process when you have good writing and when you have good actors to work with. Unlike a play where the honing is about deepening and enriching something that is the same every week, to get a different script every week, to have a new challenge, a new physical bit or a new storyline or a new... that's a completely opposite but equally fulfilling way to explore a character.
Meanwhile, you have this play, you've been in it for 7 months, and you say you have... You're black and blue, all sorts of bruises,
yes,
aches and pains. How much longer are you going to be in it?
I am absolutely in it through the end of February because all of our principal contracts for a year. And I'm hoping that I can stay longer than that. I feel like it's a company that I adore, and it's a part that these kinds of parts don't come along that often, especially for someone like me. So I would not walk away from this too quickly.
David Hyde Pierce, starring in Curtains, which is at the Al Hirschfeld Theater at 302 West 45th Street. If you want to find out more about tickets, you can call them at 212-239-6200 or visit telecharge.com. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Leonard.
You and I, we could be a tough act to follow. Can't you see? Special people doing special things, running rings around everything.